Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects, but there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few taps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects, and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
Welding instructor Alex DeClaire knows VR training platforms like ForgeFX help students master their skills.
There's a big learning curve with welding. Virtual reality simulates that exact muscle memory that they need.
Learn more at meta.com/metaverseimpact.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job! Understand
that? Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. So this is the time of the calendar where people remember that college basketball is a thing. People, not me. I will tune in to college basketball on the Thursday afternoon the tournament starts.
But there
is something that I do know that Alex wants to talk about regarding college basketball, and tis the season. So, Mr. Kirshner, you do have the floor.
What did I want to talk about with regards to college basketball?
This NLRB, the labor union stuff.
Oh, right.
That is basketball. It's basketball.
It's basketball.
Oh, I thought it was football.
Yeah, Richard, I do want to talk about that. That's an interesting segue. I thought you were talking about on the court. Hello, Stephen, as well.
No, I will never. I will never be talking about college basketball, yeah, especially men's college basketball on the court.
I didn't know at all what he was talking about either, Alex, because I just got back from Disney, so my entire life is just a painful fog. Also, shout out to one of the sources at a Power 5 program that texted me about Boston College this weekend, and I said, I don't know, I'm at Disney, and he said, off season's in July, bro. And I texted back, some string of profanities, and I said, there is no such thing as an off season. Grinders grind, baby.
Do you stay on site at Disney, or
did
you do offset?
Okay, first off, don't phrase the question like I'm a Disney adult, because I have...
You have kids, been more than once.
Well, so listeners of the show know this, and I'm fine sharing this. One of my eldest had a pretty major medical procedure a couple years ago, and before he had it, there's like Star Wars Land in Orlando, at the Disney World
thing. Shout out capitalism.
And so we were like, well, we're going to give him a win before he has to go through hell. The problem was I kept making children. And now, the youngest one didn't go because she couldn't go. And so her birthday was this weekend. We were like, we're checking this box until adulthood. Like, we're done.
I have gone twice, Richard.
I am not a fucking Disney adult because look, and I'll devote some time to this on the single wing. I have so many thoughts and questions about, like, I really and truly try to operate from like, Alex has even mentioned this about me. I'm grumpy, but I operate from like, I try to judge not. In terms of like what you do with your life. And I completely understand anyone who lives a very devoutly religious life, a devout agnostic life, a devout any sexual orientation, gender, creed, identity whatsoever.
But
I don't fucking understand the Disney. It's Richard. I have some questions for you.
Yeah.
Do you sorry for hijacking the show, but it's February.
Not sorry, it's February.
A lot of you go to like Frozen Land, which is what we did for my daughter. First, we're going to Frozen Land. And all of the employees, this is one of the most weirdly segregated places in the world, ooh, voluntarily so. So you go to Frozen Land, which is supposed to be Norway, right? And all of the employees are actually Norwegian. They're all college age. I talked to one of them. And of course, they speak perfect English and think that we're all, you know, fat and gross Americans.
Well,
and he was just like, yeah, we're here for a year. We get to skip out on winter. It's awesome. Like, basically what it is like, that's why there's a club scene in Orlando. And that's why like Orlando is actually like low key, just debaucherous, is because there's like a lot of park employees between ages 18 and 25 who just go out and get trash when they're not working. But then you go to like the Japanese part of Epcot and they're all Japanese and they're all speaking Japanese. It's really weird. But if you go to the Magic Kingdom, a lot of them are university employees. There were like a lot of Gators. This is where I was getting with this.
There's a lot of Gators. There's a lot of UCF folks.
And yes. Well, of course. I mean, shout out to my.
I was in college, because I almost.
This is what I was asking. Yeah.
I almost went to UCF.
Shout out to Space Knights.
Yeah, there we go. There is an alternate reality where I attended UCF, and one of the, I don't know if they still do it, but UCF students could get in for free.
So I saw, college gear that I saw the most of, UCF, which like doesn't even count. That's the hometown team. Number two was West Virginia. I wasn't sure what's going on. And then number three was LSU, because it's Mardi Gras. Everyone gets out for Mardi Gras in Louisiana, so they just treat it like vacation. Did you know people growing up that like got sucked into the Disney vortex, like employment or ideologically?
It fits
all the tenets of a church.
I will say this: the Disney, I did not realize the Disney adult thing was a thing until I got into adulthood and started to, and then friends of my age were still in their Disney mode. You know what I'm saying? And then obviously as friends start to have kids, that's an obvious Disney thing. But the Disney adult thing I did not realize was much of a thing until I myself got into adult.
Richard, I'm going to be honest. But
I went when I was a kid. I went a couple times when I was a teenager. I went.
First off, alarming amount of adults with no children whatsoever, like knocking my kids down to like go talk to Mickey.
Have you been to Disneyland yet as a Southern Californian?
I have not, although I have, since I moved to Southern California, been to Epcot in Florida for the first time since I was a small lad. I had a bachelor party at Epcot last year. Not mine, to be clear. But I remember being in the Uber on the way there, and the guy asked me, "Where are you going?" And I said, "Well, Epcot." And he's like, "What for?" I was like, "Bachelor party." And then I followed it up with, "But just to be clear, like, we're not weird like that. Like, you know, we're just going to have a good time." And then he said to me, "Well, the evidence is kind of making me question that, sir."
The math ain't mathing all the way there.
I don't want to get into the form thoughts that I have on these observations, such as like the sheer number of adults who I think are forcing children too small to experience Disney World in there for their own personal weird reasons. I'm not going to get into all that. I'm not shitting on it. I have small children, and it is amazing. And like, I really do marvel at like the logistics and infrastructure of how Disney does all this stuff. Like, it's really like you stand back and you're like, wow, that's like really complicated and intricate, and like how they do an attraction or all this stuff. Like, If you're a nerd, like systems analysis, or like even just someone who like, you know, I get into like how movies are made and stuff. It's like you're like, oh wow, that's really impressive. However, I'm having a really hard time with the humanity that crawls through that place every day, and I'm really trying to operate from as like a very non-pious, non-judgmental place. Like, you don't know how many. We were there for a long weekend. We were there for 3 days. No exaggeration. Do you want to take a guess at how many weddings and proposals I saw combined?
Oh, proposals! I'm sure the limit doesn't exist.
Just I did. We did stay in the park.
You're talking about the
park,
active, the active wedding ceremony in the park.
I saw five women in wedding dresses. I saw four proposals.
Wow!
In 3 days. Now this is like my 4-year-old wanted to meet Elsa, and my sons were like, I want to go and like update this at Star Wars, like get my new droid at Star Wars Land. That was sort of our mode of going to this place, was for like, I don't have a kid with a double digit age. All right. They're all single digits. So I feel like we need to get out of the segment before I say something mean to make, maybe there are Disney adults.
No,
listen to the
get
show.
You there,
maybe. Do you think they're like, I know just based on the size of our audience, there has to be a couple Disney adults. And like, I get it. Hey, Tron was awesome. It was fun. I found out like you discover things in a marriage. Tron was fun. But like the new ride, I mean, not the movie. The new ride, you like ride on it was cool. And like, I found this, it's, but you discover things in a marriage. Like, I've been married going on 14 years, and like, she's like, my wife's like, loves roller coasters, and like, we had a blast. And so like, but at the same time, real fast, I just want to get out of this. There's a bar that's made up to be the cantina from Star Wars, and they just sit you with random strangers because it's so packed. And they're little horseshoe tables, little like a booth, right? and stormtroopers come in every hour and they recreate the whole like, hey, we're looking for suspicious people. It's like all interactive experience, right? And so they come in and like you're drinking your Star Wars drink. You're like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. And the adults get to put rum in it. But like a 57-year-old woman knocked a full 16-ounce beer on my son because she jumped across the table to take a picture with a stormtrooper. As God is my witness, that is the truth. That's what happened. And then like kind of apologized to him. And my like we didn't like a full beer down on my 9-year-old son because she wanted to take a picture with a stormtrooper.
All I'm hearing, she's Alex,
not even 60 years old.
All I'm hearing, Alex, out of this is social engagement from Disney.
That's
adult.
Look, Stephen, I agree with you. I think that the Disney adult thing is pretty ridiculous. And now to walk into the ocean because Tennessee lost to Alabama on the third Saturday of October. But those Disney adults sure are weird. We would never, ever invest so much in entertainment in college football.
Alex, I thought a lot about that this weekend because I'm like, well, how is it any different to sit there and pick apart? Like, I like seeing men older than me picking apart the anachronisms in the Star Wars timeline to employees. My eye's going to start twitching. Like, how could I castigate that when we have people who are like emotionally just hell? How could you have that when you have people? Do you know how much someone just paid Missouri to be good at football? Did you guys see that amount? How is that any? How is that less weird?
I would argue that fandom. What you're really talking about, Stephen, is fandom. Fandom, period, which is a pretty irrational thing. And I agree, it's a little funnier when there are mouse ears involved. But to defend the Disney adults on this, pick a rational fandom. Can you name one? Like, I root for the fucking Pittsburgh Pirates, man. I'm going to pay $140 this year so I can watch their games from across the country. Rational?
Don't do that. Okay, that's tough.
Man.
I'm just telling, like, you know.
But are you going to go to a Pirates game with, like, a GoPro strapped to your head, like, that's live, that's, like, live broadcast? Like, I saw, do you have any live bloggers I saw? Like, people who are, like, have apparatus on?
Look, man, I think the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to win the Super Bowl one day, so we all have our fairy tales that we subscribe to.
I cheer for teams that are totally rational and have never hurt me.
Also, you walk out of Epcot with a real respect for Bobby Iger and the fellas doing those business decisions for Disney. They've got a good
Speaking of college football, I'll tell you, they
essentially print money at that place. I mean, it's like you walk out of there and you're $500 lighter or whatever, and you just can't believe that that just happened.
$500?
I was maybe $1,000. I don't know. You got 3 kids. More than that. I was talking about one day for like one or two people, but yeah.
Yeah, you fucking wish.
I can tell you've been traumatized. All right, well, fun first 12 minutes. Love it.
Financially assaulted.
Big news in college sports this week that we will talk about, I don't know, somewhat quickly. Dartmouth men's basketball players had argued before the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, that they were employees entitled to vote on whether to form a union at Dartmouth. And on Monday, a regional director of the NLRB in Massachusetts agreed with them, ordered an election to organize with the SEIU. That is going to come at a TBD date. I am told that that's likely to be in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So this is very significant. I think where you should pump the brakes is that this thing at Dartmouth is not yet unprecedented. Northwestern football players about a decade ago got a very similar ruling from a regional office of the NLRB. And then we all got to learn about the federal bureaucracy a little bit and that the NLRB is this big, vast thing. And above that regional level, there's a whole other board, the actual board of 5 seats that gets to decide if a decision like that stands. Northwestern appealed and didn't exactly win, but essentially won because the board declined to get involved and didn't rule, but said that the status quo would hold. Dartmouth has already appealed. They're going to try to do the same thing. That could take a year easily or more. It could easily stretch past the election. If the White House were to change hands in the election, then perhaps Trump would fire the general counsel of the NLRB, who we had on the show a few years ago, who did a pretty persuasive memo that is thought to carry a lot of sway with the NLRB about her view that certain college athletes are employees. So this ain't a done deal. This stuff takes a long time. The NLRB just covers private sector employers as well. And obviously most big athletic departments are at public schools, but it's also very significant. They are going to actually vote at Dartmouth. They're not going to impound the votes the way that they did at Northwestern. So we're going to learn if these players want to form a union. Because this is a private Ivy League school playing in a league with other Ivy League schools, it seems like they are not going to be able to argue that, you know, giving employee status to players at one school would complicate things competitively with the rest of the league, which is something that they argued with Northwestern, that the NLRB decided with Northwestern because it was the only private school in the Big Ten. So it's pretty sweeping. Stephen Godfrey?
Is this a good thing or is this not, is that not possible to answer? Because the initial reaction is, oh, this is it. It's over. And you've already illustrated here. There's obviously a timeline at play with any level of bureaucracy. It's just going to inch along, but also this has ripple effects that maybe even both sides haven't thought about or might impact the standing on both sides. Like this is, Alex, am I safe to assume that this is just one of those things that was going to fill the vacuum of the NCAA not doing its fundamental job all these years, and now you have an action taking place that may actually be combustible to all involved, even the players?
I think it is possible that it's combustible. I think, generally supportive of athletes being recognized as employees and going into collective bargaining, but there are a few problems. I think one obvious problem that is going to manifest with this Dartmouth basketball team is that they've got international players whose visa statuses, if they are now employees but not students, are going to be thrown into some chaos, and it's not entirely clear that they will be able to stay in the country. The ruling by this regional director of the NLRB, which could stand, was very sweeping and seemed to make an argument that because it's not essential to, you know, the so-called employee test, if you're an employer or not, whether or not your sport is profitable, then it seems like, you know, if Dartmouth basketball players are employees, then surely, like, under this standard, a whole lot of college athletes are employees. And so that's not just like SEC football players, but it could be the track team at a Sunbelt school, if you take this rationale that was laid out in this ruling. So it could be more sweeping than expected. You probably saw ESPN reported about 2 weeks ago that private equity folks are starting to circle college sports. And, you know, like, I don't think it's unreasonable to think, you know, if all college athletes,
by ESPN.
Yeah, if all college athletes were deemed to be employees, right as those sharks are getting ready to be dumped into the pool, like, are you going to have entire non-revenue sports teams like liquidated, basically, to improve the bottom line of an athletic department if it's accountable to investors who are from that world, you know, rather right, than serving any kind of nonprofit mission.
Right. But I thought private equity was, you know, going to help streamline and efficient and make industries more efficient. You know,
ESPN.com told me that it comes in and it basically just makes things better.
It definitely improved the media industry. I mean,
yeah, totally.
No bones about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think all of us, safe to say, the three of us probably do not have a ton of respect for the way that private equity does business, because it is like the most extreme rational extension of efficiency, 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 and wring profit out of whatever you can without regard for the people involved in creating that value in the first place. And you could see
just to be clear,
that does have some parallels with a certain sport.
just to be clear, this isn't because we're all jaded, you know, post 2000 media veterans. We are that, no doubt, but we're also business owners and we understand efficiency. We understand, like, this is because I can't look at anything that private equity has improved, period. They operate with a chop shop mentality. Reducing something to its equity and then liquidating it or selling it off is not efficiency. That's just craven capitalism, which is, if you want to operate that way, our country has proven that you'll probably have a place to do that. But you can't argue that it's actually going to improve a product fundamentally. When private equity gets involved in everything from restaurant chains to hotels to media.
I was having a conversation with a guy who owns car washes.
Literally
veterinarians. Yeah. Veterinarians. Yes. They're in everywhere.
Yes.
Book publishing.
Oh, I'll give you one. I got one. The day that I found out about like whatever the latest upheaval was with Vox during the SI debacle, I had to switch optometrists. And go to a new optometrist because the eye doctor I was seeing, she was a part of three doctors and the others had sold to a PE, and they immediately, like, I started getting emails and text alerts and like, we want to sell you this stuff. And then I went in, tried to go in for an eye exam. They tried to sell me all this. I was like, this is ridiculous. I just needed my contacts checked, you know, like once a year. It's like, Alex was being very diplomatic and I respect that. But the bottom line is like, I need to know what private equity does for the American consumer or the products that they peddle onto us that somehow has improved it. Where are my Republican listeners? I know you're out there.
Where I would bring this back is that that is a potential interplay with college athletes being employees, right? And with the more explicit operation of this thing as a business. And whether it is via this case, whether it is via a different NLRB case involving USC football players, and whether or not they are jointly employed by the Pac-12, soon to be RIP, and the NCAA, or whether it's via a different case that's actually in the court system, not the NLRB's framework, called Johnson v. NCAA, there are a number of efforts right now to get college athletes deemed employees rather than, you know, student athletes or whatever term the NCAA might prefer. And I do think that it is very, very likely that in this case, or in one of these others, but I think even particularly in this case, I don't think that they're going to get stopped at the top of the NLRB for a few reasons, like Northwestern did a few years ago. Point is, it's coming that some big regulatory body or court is going to say that certain college athletes are employees and going to say it in a final form after appeals are exhausted. And at that point, that's going to be a hard train to get back into the station unless the NCAA gets Congress to come in and say, you have an antitrust exemption. College athletes cannot be employees, yada yada. And
if they're all
that employee, hasn't happened yet.
Let's just say they're all employees, or just in football. Like, I know we're not supposed to build those kind of silos because that's not the reality of an athletic department. But if they all become employees, and private equity does eventually get the talons around this thing, I would open this up, and maybe we turn this into like a subscriber episode. I know we do have a couple business professorial business type people who teach. And I the only thing I liked in business school before I flunked out was econ. I really liked econ. But if you look at the like efficiency standard, I think it is, of like Nick Saban's Alabama, for instance. I was thinking about this recently after this whole private equity thing. And shout out to Pete Thamel. There's no reason to dance around it. It was one of the most horrifically reported things I've ever seen. Alabama was the standard of success in this sport. It is not efficient at an economic level. Hiring 100 analysts is not financially efficient.
I think you skipped over the real bugaboo there with private equity. When you skipped over and assumed it would just be football as employees. Because what...
Oh, it would be everybody, yeah.
Right. So here is the...
Could be.
Well, that's what I was going with the analysts and coaches. Like it's not, someone would come in and trim that fat and go like, well, like,
but you're talking about football. I want to take you. So a lot of the existential dread in a lot of administrations is that they don't know who's going to all be employees. Is it just going to be the football team, or is it going to be everybody? And then when you talk rowing about everybody and you get to rowing, soccer, beach volleyball, and you want to talk about inefficiencies, well.
Well, those would just get cut, which like that's a future that I can project pretty easily, right? What makes me laugh is that I think the people who would be bullied for private equity or at least ideologically or politically aligned with that kind of mentality, I don't think what I'm getting at is I don't think people who are fiscal conservatives who love college football have ever stopped, and maybe they have, maybe I'm wrong, and because I talk to a lot of NIL guys, and I've said this before, I've said this to my co-host here, I've said this when I speak at journalism schools. If you don't have sources who are opposite you politically, ideologically, whatever, then you're not a good reporter. You really have to embrace the mindset of someone you fundamentally disagree with, because it's just part of the job. So I'm going to ask some of these people that I have in my Rolodex, like, it's not financially efficient to do what Nick Saban did or what Kirby Smart does. PE would come in and cut that.
They literally come throw in and say, like, these schools literally just throw money at it.
Yes.
Private equity wouldn't think it was cool.
The description of the Alabama coaching, and I don't know if Kalen DeBoer is going to do this, but I know Kirby will. There's a description of the room, which is there's a small table, a head coach sits, position on-field coaches sit around the table. Behind them are 2 to 3 versions of yourself who are analysts. And then in the corners of the square room are the GAs assigned to the analysts. Like, that's how the room works. And it's really tight. It's just like shoving a lot of dudes and windbreakers in a high-protein diet into a small room for 45 minutes. It's horrific. I've been in there. Like, a PE is going to go in and go like, oh, we don't need that. Fuck! Why the fuck is Doug Marrone here? Like, they're just going to go in and start cutting.
College football teams are corporations that are, in many ways, too strung out and spread out. Right? Like, recruiting is both sales and hospitality, especially when you talk about the on-campus aspect of it. You've got a health and human performance wing, right? You've got a facilities wing. You've got it. You've got all these different things, and then you have the literal team and schemes. And it's talent development deployment. You've got all these different things that comprise a college football organization, which is why this is something that I've said on the show time and time again, if you want to win championships, in my opinion, you have to get a coach that swings more on the CEO of the chart versus scheme guy. I think one of the last true scheme guys just decided he'd rather be in South Florida than in Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
Are wins the revenue, or is revenue the revenue? And that's
depends on what game you're playing. It depends on what game you're playing.
But PE is going to come in and say revenue is revenue. But if you're at Alabama, you are willing to throw money at a problem to solve, like Texas, for instance. All these guys run ruthlessly efficient businesses so they can become rich assholes so they can fund their college football program.
So that they can throw money at college football. Sure.
Yeah, I guess that's the deep sort of irony here, is that you can't run these things like PE because you've made all this revenue in American society specifically so you could have this surplus that you could donate to the school, or you could, you know, have a ridiculous training center. Because, Richard, the first thing that's going to go is going to be all of that student support. So if you have, excuse me, making this number up, you have 6 people that are full-time who are dedicated to making sure the 140-odd players are academically eligible. Your training table is going to go. Your strength and conditioning is going to get limited. Remember we talked, was it last episode, about the NFL model's different, right?
Because
players.
But remember, the difference there is those are professional athletes who can pay for their own private training.
We're paying these kids.
You're not paying millions of dollars.
But I can tell you, I can tell you where we're headed. And so I just don't know if any of this would ever work by the standards of the people who want it to work, or want to win the most, I should say.
I want to, yes, but I think that it's still 2 issues. You know, like if I conflated these two, or if I led us into assuming that they're automatically hand in hand, athletes becoming employees, like Florida State ushering in an era of the most rapacious capitalism possible into college football. Those 2 things don't automatically have to go hand in hand. It's just a worry that I have. I think the other worry that I have is that, like Richard, you and I did a pretty extensive bargaining process in our last jobs. Well, 2 jobs ago for you, I guess. Whatever. We did a long union bargaining process, and it was really hard. And We did that when we were in our mid-20s and we had experienced coworkers who had, you know, a lot of industry familiarity. College sports is a hard organizing dynamic because the workforce turns over every 5 minutes and there's basically nobody who's been around for more than 5 or 6 or I guess in this case 9 years, but typically 4 or 5 years.
Unless you're playing so quarterback like, in the G5, baby.
It is. So I think it is very possible, even likely that, you know, if mass organizing comes to college sports, that the athletes kind of get rolled at the bargaining table. I think that that could happen. But I also think that's even that might be a lot better than the status quo. And I have yet to find another system that seems like it would work better than the one that is proven to work to regulate labor versus management in the whole of the economy.
Well, the system sucks. It's just the only one we have. Like it's never been great. And honestly, like most organized labor ends up corrupt or punished by the capitalist machine. Like that's not an opinion. That's just how it happens.
Call me after 90 days.
But
I mean, Richard's going to get a lot better terms because he's in the SI union than if he weren't.
Right, but he also won't have a job. So, I'm not blaming the organized labor for the lack of employment. I'm just saying, like, the system blows ass. But to go back to one point on the rolling sort of inexperience of the labor class here in college, surely they would have someone like, okay, when we were all involved in the Vox union, you guys were involved. I just signed things as a, like they, y'all came to the older employees in the company and were just like, hey, can you do this out of solidarity for us? Cause then it'll show this, this, and this. Although I would point out that my two co-hosts are a large reason why I constantly tell Vox Media to like basically fuck off in different ways is because I'm guaranteed a severance. And that happened because of the union, which is a good thing, but you guys had the Writers Guild. You had the WGA East helping you. Like someone's going to come to the aid of like a defensive tackle at Oklahoma. To like, surely someone would be there, like negotiating on their behalf, right?
That is correct, and I think that's actually going to be kind of a second day story about this. Is that there are different groups that are jockeying to be the one who organizes athletes. I actually have a bit of skepticism about all of them in different ways.
Why?
But. Because, Stephen, in your cynicism, you're not always wrong. There are selfish actors in every entity, sector, including an organized labor. I mean, you know,
Can I ask a dumb question? Because you're a labor expert here. Could I ask a really stupid question
for
a second?
But go ahead.
Well, of the three of us.
Yeah.
Would where I'm going with this is a hypothetical. And I know how this is going to look visually. Could the, like, you want a labor, you want to have someone negotiate with some experience in the field. Like, we use the Writers Guild, for instance, because it, like, kind of mirrored what we were doing. There's a WGA in Los Angeles, and I'm in that one, too, because of other work I do. But, like,
yeah.
Would the NFLPA be a logical sort of extension here?
Yeah, I don't think that
college arm of the NFL because there are
that's
things
what I'm getting
like,
at so,
because
yeah,
what,
like,
there are unique things to college athlete well excuse me there are unique things to athletics that have to happen right like you, the assuming walk with me here assuming the NCAA gets an antitrust exemption that allows them to cap salaries in some way shape or form okay pretend that's something okay. that is uniquely that sports labor unions are uniquely fit to operate within. You know what I'm saying? Like there are sports labor unions are uniquely able to execute some of these massive group licensing deals, for instance, right? They're uniquely able to, there are things that sports unions are able to do or cut out to do that the Writers Guild, you know, is not, I don't want to say not cut out for it, but I don't know if the Writers Guild is the right organization for that. I don't know.
I do think that there is, I mean, the Teamsters are a great example of this. Like if you have organizing experience, you can organize people in a lot of different sectors. Like the Teamsters are not just truck drivers, right? Like there's a name and occupation that the Teamsters have not.
They're going to throw Greg Sankey in an abandoned right. quarry somewhere in Jersey.
So there'd be a lot of people jockeying, I think, to do college athlete organizing if that time comes. I mean, they actually, we don't even have to use hypotheticals. It's the SEIU, the Service Employees International Union, who is doing the Dartmouth drive. And obviously, Dartmouth basketball players do not at first glance have a lot in common. Yes, exactly. At first glance, the basketball players at Dartmouth have very little in common with the staff at a Chipotle. But if you can organize one group of people as an organization, I think you can organize another. And Richard's right, though, that there are, you know, there are certain skills and certain understandings of industries that would make some groups more equipped to help with college athletes than others. I don't think that's wrong either, but there are a lot of possibilities and also a lot of challenges because Godfrey, again, in your cynicism, you're not wrong about everything. Like a union is not going to fix every economic problem in college sports or in college football, the same way that our union at Vox did not solve every economic problem facing employees or help contractors who aren't eligible to join, who don't have the same rights to join unions under federal law. That will be an interesting thing to follow in college football as well. How will schools try to put different groups of college athletes perhaps right. against each other, depending on the sizes of bargaining units. So there's like, this is going to be a whole world, man, like where this is going. And it won't be perfect, but I do think it will be better than what we've got. And the Dartmouth players could be the ones who kind of push the domino that knocks everyone into that world.
I think there's a vast difference between like our union experiences or people who are listening who are in like the UAW or, you know, various unions across labor. Like I have a spectrum of opinions on like organized labor where it makes a total amount of sense to me that the UAW exists. It makes sense to me that unions exist for firefighters or teachers. You know, we organized at Vox, which was a little bit like, hey, this plane has lost a wing and smoking, and we're probably going to hit the ground at, you know,
not probably
300 miles an hour. But we as a staff of this airplane have organized and we have reached terms before we nosedive into the woods. So the difference between something like that, like a bad business is a bad business is a bad business. But college sports is supposed to exist in perpetuity.
Right. But it's a bad business. But it's a bad business.
Which goes back to that PE thing where I'm like, you guys let these fucking wolves in the hen house. Like, I guess my gripe to connect the two, which I don't think was Alex's initial conceit in proposing this segment, but the thing that scares, I'll put it this way, and this is what I want to educate. Most of the people in my life that I come across are like relatives, in-laws, whatever. I think they're going to be faster to say, man, paying players is going to ruin college sports. No, private equity would fucking ruin college sports in a way that would render it unrecognizable. I have spent over 10 years of my career trying to tell you that kids are already on payroll. They're undervalued, underpaid. The whole thing is servitude, and it's really disgusting, especially when you consider the labor history of like minorities in the South. So for me, like just personally, I'm going to explain to you in hopefully in a quick and efficient way, like paying kids isn't going to change shit. But if you let private equity in, I understand why a lot of athletic department employees right now are probably tight-assed, because imagine trying to come up with like a 4-year strategy for an athletic department right now. Imagine if you were tasked with that at a major athletic department right now.
And that's like, where I get back to. That's where I get back to the base. We don't know the base question of who will be made to be employees or not. Yeah. So it's the difference between potentially 100-odd, 150-odd employees or 600-odd employees. You know what I mean? Even if you're fucking paying a minimum wage, like that's a lot of money. And that's
every business has a financial planning, right?
Yeah.
And you have to ask a handful of core questions that you know the answer to, even if you don't know your own economic forecast or like you don't know what sales are going to be in Q4 this year or maybe, right, like a COVID situation happens. You generally know your headcount and you generally know like how much you got to pay people or like, hey, we got 20 people, so we got 20 salaries, right? Like, Imagine trying to develop some sort of strategic plan at the University of Florida, Ohio State, or USC, right? So public, private, whatever, it doesn't matter. And then figure out, are you going to gain 500 employees under the age of 25? You going to insure them? Like, I mean, it's a beast, dude. Good luck. By the way, you assholes brought it all on yourself.
I think that's a great way to sum it up. at splitzoneduo.com, by the way, the home of Split Zone Duo's premium content on Substack. We've got a lot of goodies coming for you on an ongoing basis, a lot of stuff that we're very proud of. Just in the last month, Godfrey and Ryan Nanny released the Blindside commentary track, which runs the full length of that film. Godfrey, it was your first rewatch of that movie in, what, a very, very long time.
I begrudgingly went, I said this, but I got a copy of the script when it was in production by some people at Ole Miss, and then I went to the theater and sort of watched it the way that you would just, I don't know, I don't want to get into it, but yes, I did see it in the theater, arms crossed, and then that was the first time since. Ryan had never seen it before. You can cue it. By the way, I'm not going to acknowledge who, because it's technically a copyright no-no. It's a big one. Inside the SCD community, and this is all I'm going to say, I'm not going to tell you where to look. I'm just going to tell you, I'm not even going to encourage you to look. Our depraved listeners have synced into a single file, if you will, the commentary track and the film. So this is it's a decently sized file. So
yeah, I imagine it's a chunky boy.
It's on the dark web.
It might not even be a copyright
of SCD's dark web. A bunch of you lunatics have just mashed together Ryan and I's track with a link. I think it's like a low level of the film's audio, so you kind of have an idea. And I don't know. I think subtitles are involved. I don't know, but all that's together. And yeah, that's a thing that may or may not be floating around the SCD internet right now. You sickos.
Someone send that to me because I still have not. I have yet to watch the movie / sync the contract. Commentary track.
I honestly just for all the things that you and I have talked about, like in the world of college sports, I kind of want to watch it with you. Watch the movie. Okay. Well, I'll put it this way: you and I have spent a lot of time together. You'll watch the film and you'll know when you'll hear me, like in your own head. Yeah. And then if you want to do the commentary track sometime, that's great. But like, yeah.
I did a show on the Substack, splitsunder.com, last Friday about Auburn's new defensive coordinator, DJ Durkin.
Furthering our agenda, Alex. Congratulations. Welcome to the agenda,
by the way. I did, and then I spent a lot of the day having very productive arguments with Auburn fans.
Alex.
My agenda to bash Auburn.
World. I was at Disney World, and I got a text from someone who shall not be named. And they're like, Alex is fighting in the Minchies. And so I was like in line for something. I pull it up. And here's the best part of the story. Alex is arguing about, by the way, the idea that Alex did this because DJ Durkin is at Auburn absolutely betrays that if you believe that.
I got receipts, bro.
You never once listened to the show, watched the show, or even consumed anything that Alex Kirshner's ever done. All right, number one. Number two, I pulled up the argument thread. And here's how I know you shouldn't have been doing it. I could only see yours. Because every other like counter response was blocked, was fucking blocked. Do you know what it takes for me to block you? I'm the guy who's going to tell you about how I'll bang your mom. Like I love to fight on Twitter in a crazy way, not in like a I'm going to seriously argue these points way, but like I'm waiting for you to say something where I can like drop a bofa in there. If I've blocked you, it's for like pretty serious violation of like decency. And every person that was arguing with you was blocked on my account.
I do hope you'll listen, Alex. Silly internet arguments aside, the point that I wanted to draw out for people in this story about DJ Durkin and his time at my alma mater, the University of Maryland, is that it is not right, it is not correct to just kind of blithely say, this guy killed a kid and leave it at that. But it is also not right at all to take that as a defense of him and to excuse, to not talk about, to frame his career in a way that pretends it didn't happen, his time at Maryland. And I hope that the show explains that if you get a chance to listen at splitzoneduo.com. I want to say thank you to our partners at Homefield. You can use the promo code SZD20, that's SCD20, for 20% off your first order at homefieldapparel.com. They are sort of in their basketball era this month, Duke and North Carolina collections, among others in the past week or two. Very pretty colors. Love the attention that they are paying to the triangle schools, the downtrodden that don't get covered often enough in college basketball. Homefield just does what they do at a very, very, very high level. And everything that they roll out on a regular basis is incredibly comfortable, incredibly attractive, and pretty much all I wear. Yeah.
Alex, so back to Epcot for a second.
Yeah.
We're like rounding the bend, right? I got three the wife and I were managing. We're doing it's a lot. Yeah, your lightning lane. You got your concerns. I, of course, have my just floating ADHD, so I'm constantly looking at crowds and surveying things. And I'm a tall person, and I see this poor, unsuspecting Disney. Well, he was an adult at Disney without a child, so he rounds the bin. He's got on a home field T-shirt, but he had on like a home field shirt, not a school. He had on like one of these, like I guess from this line, this black and gold line. And I just imagine me walking around the corner in sunglasses, and I just go like this. Home field, like that to someone, and he just goes and I just kept walking. So if that guy happens to be listening, sorry. If you were at Epcot last weekend, and a really tall person just literally pointed down like a cop and said home field, that was me.
There's actually a friend of the show who I mentioned that I was at a bachelor party at Epcot last year.
Yeah,
the host of that bachelor party, the now groom, had been at somewhere Disney, Florida, like a year before, and sent me a picture with an SCD listener in the SCD home field green T-shirt at Disney. So we know we got kind of the SCD mafia.
We have people in the kingdom, you think? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. The highest levels of it. In the highest levels. Yeah.
Bob Iger himself sent me a picture one time. Huge when I worked SCD at ESPN stand. And it splits onto a home field T-shirt.
Yeah.
Can you ask him when Frozen 3 is coming out? Because some of us have like situations. All right.
The other sponsor, proud partner of the show, Nokian Tires. And this ties into a thing that me and Alex are doing on the Substack this week. We're doing a Super Bowl preview with friend of the show, Arif Hassan, on Substack later this week. Have y'all seen? It's like raining in Vegas. And I hope everybody around on the strip or a strip adjacent or 45 minutes out to the Chiefs Hotel in Lake Las Vegas is driving on their Nokian tires. Because you're going to
He's not kidding, by the way.
Because it looks really bad.
Dude. So,
when it rains in Vegas, I've seen that happen. One of my best friends lives in Vegas. He works in the horse racing industry. If there's like a half inch of rain, it's like the world shuts down. Because the roads aren't even designed to take water. Because it's a desert.
Dude, in Southern California this week, it has been torrential. And you move here and they tell you it doesn't rain a lot. And that's mostly true. But I'll tell you, I felt a little misled, but thankful that I was driving around I got home on Sunday, like 5 minutes before it started, like to get really, really, really bad. Like it had just started to rain on the drive. Stay safe out there. And if you are using Nokian tires, then kudos to you for using tires that are going to give you, like I say, the absolute best shot to make sure that your car handles this weather as well as it possibly can. It has
Godfrey,
been,
y'all think,
it has yeah, been okay, wet. Go ahead.
Godfrey, you are not going to be on the Super Bowl preview with me and Alex and Arif tomorrow. I need a pick for Sunday.
I'm not going to pick Kyle Shanahan, so let's go Chiefs. Oh, I got this. Oh, 1 second. 49ers are up by two possessions. Let's just say they're up by 10 entering the fourth and they lose by four.
Please do.
No, it already happened. Sure. This has literally already happened. They were up in the fourth quarter against the Chiefs. And Kyle Shanahan blew a lead in the Super Bowl.
Sure. Yes.
That happened. You keep saying like I'm making this shit up.
No, I know you're not making it up. I know you're not. I know you're not making it up.
It's weird because we have a lot of friends. Like Arif, we have a lot of smart NFL friends, and I know I know I'm being irrational, but I'm also not. Like I'll never forgive Kyle Shanahan. It is his fault. It's not Dan Quinn's. It's not Devontae Freeman's. It's not Matt Ryan's. It will always be Kyle Shanahan's fault. I don't care how smart he is. I don't care how much you like his plays. I will never let this go.
Before we get into the more pressing NFL coaching news or the more interesting NFL coaching news, Arthur Smith, Pittsburgh Steelers offensive coordinator. Alex, how are we feeling? We did not get to this last week. It was late breaking news.
It's probably fine. It's probably fine. He was a good offensive coordinator before he was a bad head coach. We're coming from Matt Canada, like NFL Brian Ferentz. The bar is on the floor. It's probably fine. That's all I've got.
Who's your number three tight end? Old boy's about to.
That's a great
old
question.
Old boy's about to fucking eat.
Great question. He's Darnell Washington's number two. I want Darnell to get the ball. I mean, we saw what he could do in Athens.
George Pickens,
so we'll see.
George Pickens is about to realize his full potential as a run blocker. He's going to go out there with like spike gauntlets and be run blocking.
He would do that quite well, to be honest.
I know.
He'll give
right?
you the business. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like George Pickens is about to become a Steelers legend for just fist fighting on like ISO handoffs.
Richard, Steven, the last week or two have brought a lot of hand-wringing about the state of the coaching industry in college football and the difficulty that the sport has had in a few anecdotal instances, at least, of keeping up with NFL opportunities. Jeff Hafley just rolled out of Boston College to be the Green Bay Packers defensive coordinator. Obviously, Jim Harbaugh not just left Michigan for the NFL in what seemed like kind of a quest for the Lombardi Trophy because he really wants to be in the NFL, but he took a lot of assistance with him, took the strength coach with him. Just yesterday, I saw that Pitt's best assistant coach, Charlie Partridge, left to be a position coach with the Indianapolis Colts, and there are numerous others. I think Liam Cohen might be going back to the NFL, right, Richard? It's been a busy week or two for college coaches going back to the league. There's been a rumor flying around, and it is just a rumor as I talk about this, about Chip Kelly maybe looking around, leaving UCLA for NFL OC jobs. Point is that there has been, as a result of that, a lot of angst about what, if anything, college football should do about this and to what extent this kind of coach movement is normal or abnormal. One reflection I would say of kind of the developing conventional wisdom on this is Kirk Herbstreit on January 31st said that college football in its current state will be seeing more and more coaches heading to the NFL without boundaries and regulation that makes sense. Coaches that get real opportunities in the NFL will be gone. This trend will continue until there is a new governing body and it creates a CBA with a player's entity or union that would include issues like NIL transfer portal and eventually revenue sharing. The sport is spiraling out of control, as we know, and many of these coaches are not sticking around and waiting. It's just a new reality for the sport. Stephen Godfrey, my question for you is there anything that college football could reasonably do or should reasonably do to stem this kind of movement?
Do you think that they had this kind of conversation in a very different media landscape when Jimmy Johnson left Miami for the Cowboys?
I
know we didn't have this conversation when Nick Saban left LSU for the Dolphins.
I would say this.
Do you think that we had this conversation when Steve Spurrier went to the Redskins?
I don't know.
He's right in the first third. Then
yes.
He gets a little...
Correct.
Then he gets off in the second third, and then the third third is, you know, whatever, a hand wave it away. I talked about this before on this show. When you talk to a college coach who has gone to the NFL, it's like they're coming back from a day spa, man. They are dropped a couple pounds, skin's looking a little bit better. Lord knows their marriage is in a more healthy place, relative in the coaching industry. And they are a little bit just. The most instructive anecdote is the one I give. It's I had coffee with a coach and we were talking about the dichotomy and he looks down at his phone sitting on the table and he says that hasn't rung in 30 minutes. Like that's the difference. There's no recruiting. Yeah.
What you're saying, it's always been that way.
Well, hold on a second. I was at breakfast with a coach a couple months ago and like, he's got to take calls because he's trying to coordinate a transfer visit and these parents that are trying to come in town and yada, yada, yada. In the NFL, the personnel department handles that, the free agent visit. And then he's just there to give his portion of the free agent pitch, for instance. So what I think is interesting about the current moment in time is the reasons to leave are quality of, are a different quality of life reason than I think they used to be. I think this is a reflection of the NIL, the this, that, and the third. Because the college game, and particularly the mandate of the college head coach, has shifted. But where I think it's different is it used to be, we used to talk about going to the NFL as all ball all the time as like a negative, right? As like a, if you go there, it's all ball all the time. And a lot of the times college coaches get up and can't hack it, right? Now we talk about the all ball all the time as like a respite. You know what I mean? And
oh, they love it. Yeah.
That's what I mean. And that's where I think the difference in how we talk about why these guys are leaving, or how they talk about why they're leaving, and how they talk about the experience of it at the higher level, I think has changed.
Okay. Three things real fast. One, the facts are inarguable here that it's a harder life right now to be a college head coach, but it's been that way for a very long time. I don't want anything I'm about to say to come off as in defense of the messy schedule, the complete and total lack of regulation or order or oversight. We have devoted hours, hundreds of hours on this show to talking about the major problems that exist in college sports. But the reason why those problems exist is because the overseers of college sports decided to throw the reins down once amateurism was broken, and no one has minded the shop since then. Now, I want to talk specifically about, I'll give you one anecdote. This is the best way I learned it, because I always like to talk about what I don't know, and because I want to learn with you guys, and I think that's the real role of media. Like, I'm not an authority or an expert. Do you guys remember when Urban got in trouble for the grinding incident? This is not a joke. This is not a joke.
I don't remember
He's in a bar in Columbus, Ohio, after they had played on a weeknight against
Thursday
the Bengals.
Night against the Bengals.
Okay. So you go up the road from Cincinnati to Columbus. My favorite sports team in the world is a terrible NFL team, so I know a lot about the NFL as a fan. But professionally, I've only ever worked in college, and I don't want to work in the NFL. I called someone in the NFL, and I said, the bigger issue when Urban got in trouble was not the grinding. It was actually, unless you're Shelley, the issue was that he did not get on that plane to go back to Jacksonville. And I didn't quite understand that.
And then lied professionally.
Yes, and lied to the player. That was another thing where I was. So here's what I'm getting at. I can name one, two, three sitting head coaches, two in the SEC, who have ditched the team flight or bus home after a game to go and interview or to go meet with a booster or to go. Like, there's one in my head specifically that I'm not at liberty to say that happened the season before last, where it's like, oh, he stuck around in town to talk to X because he could go to a nearby major city. Like, we talk about these things on the Carousel episodes all the time. So when I asked the NFL source, I was like, hey, why is that a big deal? Like, not the bumping and grinding and getting caught on video, but like, what, that he was in Columbus, he went to a steakhouse. And the answer was, you don't have to recruit, you don't do all those things, everything that Richard just said. So the expectation of the NFL is, especially during the season, if you are a head coach, on-field coach, you are essentially in the laboratory at all times being a coach.
And you are watching really two things. Film on the plane ride home.
It's all reconnaissance and planning and coaching. It's those three things. So like crushing film and figuring out the tiniest minutia of a thing. Believe it or not, and I can't believe I'm going to endorse this because of, like, I think Belichick is not a genius as much as others. But like the Halberstrom book, The Education of a Coach, has these really interesting chapters. That book was written a long time ago, before Spygate, on how Belichick learned to break down film to its absolute tiniest minutia, down to like, we're going to build a game plan because I don't like the footwork of the safety, right? That's the NFL.
And I mean,
college doesn't exist like that.
And you look for those edgewise, because if you take the example, the Jags were dog shit that season and almost won that game. They lost that game to the Bengals by 3 points. And the Bengals, I want to say that was the year they went to the AFC Championship game.
Yes.
It was a bad football team on the road on a short week who almost won despite gestures at how bad that team was.
So looking at the regulations and the many, many, many overseers guardrails that are in place in the NFL, you're constantly trying to get an edge, and the edge is going to exist, again, in reconnaissance, development, and coaching of like, all right, we're going to break all this. We're going to synthesize this information. We're going to turn it into a plan, and we're going to coach the shit out of these professional athletes. So that's what I learned. I was like, no, like, he should have been using that time to do this. And that's the expectation of the NFL. I want to get to this in the most honest way possible. And so I'm not going to hedge around. And I swear to God, I'm trying to swear off media backbiting, but it just keeps happening. This tweet, I looked it up. Look, Twitter's self-purported statistics are dubious at best because Elon's insane. It's almost at 1 million views. And it's also the lead reporter at ESPN. They're Woj, and that's Pete Thamel. The reason why we're having this conversation, and this is the cascade effect that happens in the media that I'm going to be really honest about. Instead of just breaking the transactional news, which is what Pete Thamel exists for at ESPN, he is their Woj. He's just like the other guys, the Schefters and the Ian Rappaports and stuff that do it in the NFL. He did a weird thing this time, and I'll explain to you why in a second. So he tweets on January 31st, hey, Halfley is expected to become the new defensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers. Then there's two subsequent tweets that I've never seen Pete do. This is contextual to a transactional news because his entire existence at ESPN, he's tasked with being the person who breaks the news first so ESPN can own a news cycle. That's why they do these things.
It's a business model, kids.
Yes, it is an entire business model. And so all of the journalism and the off-season profiling that you see Pete do, it's in service of source dev. So it's just making sure that those agents and those high-ranking coaches call him with the information first because he basically puts out PR versions of journalism about them in a year-round cycle. So he's famous for doing this for the Urban Meyer tree, which is kind of where Halfley comes from because he went to Boston College from Ohio State as defensive coordinator. He puts these two contextual tweets out that suddenly become the narrative. And this is the shit that like burns me to my core where I have to stand up and say, this is not an honest representation of the news. This is agenda driving at the highest and most prominent place in the entire media cycle, which is ESPN, who basically owns college football. So Thamel says, Halfley's reasons for taking this coordinator job are rooted in both the overall state of college football and the opportunity to work for one of the NFL's most respected franchises. The second one is the one that gets me because this is, I would bet my fucking mortgage. This was a co-created quote that is completely dubious, and it has absolutely no journalistic credit. It's why
you mean it wasn't just said. It wasn't
correct.
Yeah.
It was manufactured. Yeah. And I've worked in source quoting my entire career, and I get the need. Sometimes you have to tell a story that way. This was bullshit. This was PR, and I'll say it to Pete's face. Quote, he wants to go coach football again in a league that is all about football, a source told ESPN. Quote, college coaching has become fundraising, NIL, and recruiting your own team and transfers. There's no time to coach football anymore, end quote. Boys, Jeff Halfley was on the fucking hot seat entering this season at Boston College. Jeff Halfley is someone who has been the recipient of a lot of positive Pete Thamel coverage because of his association with his agency and the tree that he came off of. I've illustrated this before in the media. We've talked about Chris Lowe at ESPN. We talked about his favoritism towards CAA and Jimmy Sexton clients. I catch a lot of shit for just saying the thing out loud when we do our media, or I've said it on other radio shows or whenever I'm invited. This is not me trying to be mean. I'm not trying to create a feud or a fight. This is how the machine works. And this is why I think it's important if you want to consume and appreciate college sports to understand how your sausage gets made. This narrative was an excuse because this is a bad time of year if you're a program like Boston College.
It's January 31st.
Get a head coach.
It's January
a terrible
31st.
Time of year.
Right.
Yes, this is a very
it's
bad
a little
time of
favor
year.
Out the door to Boston College's AD to be like, hey, I'm not leaving because this is a mess and you're going to fire me.
I don't think it's a favor to Boston College so much, Alex, is that it's cover for Halfley for walking
out
on the job.
Agreed. I just mean in terms of, I think that from the reporter's perspective, I agree. I imagine that Halfley, it's like, oh, just trying to be nice on the way out as well. Like, obviously covering his own ass, but also just like, hey, Boston College AD, who now is going to have to find a coach in February, just want everyone to know it wasn't this guy's fault. There was nothing he could have done, even though everything you're saying is right.
What is not Jeff Halfley's fault, and what Jeff Halfley cannot control, is that the Packers fired the defensive coordinator on January 24th. That, and I'm not even trying to give him cover there. That's just it. Like, that's the thing. And so
I don't fault him for taking the job.
Right. And this is where I want to go with, like, or get at, is like this is a notion of Jeff Halfley did what is best for Jeff Halfley and presumably Jeff Halfley's family. And when Jeff Halfley does that, it is considered different than when Jeff Halfley's quarterback does that, or Jeff Halfley's defensive tackle does that, or I'm sure you can find a Jeff Halfley quote about the transfer portal and commitment and along the exact lines that you think I'm getting at.
There was a source quote just then about how hard it is to recruit your own players, and so he goes and does the same thing that the sourced quote is bemoaning. the thing about that quote, that horseshit quote, could be applied to explain away any coach that were to leave, okay? Or to, like, are those – NIL is not a problem unless you don't have NIL. The transfer portal is not a problem if you are good at the transfer portal and good at keeping your team intact. Is it more work to do? Yes. Do we need legislative oversight? Absolutely. Are the rules either non-existent and or fucked? Yes. Boston College was not succeeding because Jeff Hafley's Boston College was not up to the standards that Jeff Hafley promoted when he got hired by Boston College. He beat the posse out of town, and he used one of the top names in the media to explain away him doing for himself the best thing that he could as he didn't even – guys, he left because things are so bad in college football. He left because he got a better job offer at a really inconvenient time for his current employer.
And
full stop.
And, but it is a treatise, and it is it is its own commentary. It is a commentary on the sport that he's not going to be the head coach of the Packers. He's going to be the defensive coordinator of the Packers. Okay. But this is where I'm going at this. There is, to me, and how I've been thinking about it, there is a modicum of privilege here involved in being able to go from we can laugh about P2G8 and we can laugh about Boston College and all that sort of stuff. It's a top 50, 60. I mean, you know what I mean.
Head it's a coaching top 65 job to 70 job in the country.
Sure. Okay. All right. We can agree.
BC?
Yes, we can agree. And so,
somewhere in there, yeah.
Okay, but sideline that for a second, because the real point is that there's a line of talented coaches out the door that would want to take that job. Fran Brown just left the cornerbacks coach job at Georgia to take the Syracuse job, which is the same six half dozen as Boston College. Like it's
okay.
The fact that Jeff Hafley is leaving is its own commentary, and I understand that. And I just paid it credence for 15 minutes on the show that I co-host. But there's another conversation that needs to be had too, which is the talent pipeline of coaching in this sport. It's gonna be okay. Like maybe they hire some guy who goes 3-9 next year. But hey, guess what? Jeff Hafley's a pretty good football coach, and he just went 3-9 at Boston College 2 years ago. There is a pipeline of coaches involved that need to be surfaced at in kind of the both and conversation of guys leaving to the NFL. If you want to go to the NFL, go. There are guys in college who are ready, willing, and able to take the bull by the horns in this job and take them and run with them. And maybe Boston College's next head coach goes 3-9 for 3 years and they suck and they never figure it out. But that's a Boston College conversation more than it is of that specific coach conversation, more than likely.
I talked to a coach a couple weeks ago, a coordinator right now, who I believe his exact words to me were, surely I could get a shot at Buffalo or San Jose State. And he wasn't being sarcastic. Like, people want to be head coaches. And I sometimes forget about how badly they want to be head coaches.
And then somebody tells you they want to be head coach at San Jose State.
Right. And it's like, and then they're like, yeah, I want Buffalo or I want San Jose State. And that drives home the idea. I have heard coaches, I'm wondering if this might have been the same coach. Anyway, I don't remember. So I've heard a coach. It might have been the same one. I might be mixing conversations. I've had coaches express to me that they would like the UConn job, that they would like a look at Hawaii. I've heard both of those things as well. So, like, if you haven't been one, and you want to be one, you'll crawl on glass to be one.
But I agree with everything that both of you have just said. It doesn't necessarily change the stance here that all this guy did was actually just skip one chapter. And the chapter was, next year he goes 4-8, he gets fired by Boston College. And then in that cycle, he becomes defensive coordinator for the Packers or something thereof. Let's just say, like, all we did was pinch together two tiny, very closely connected points of a timeline. Just, it's like we just squeezed it together. I'm fine with that. The man literally looked around and said, I'm not going to be able to do, I have promised something I can't deliver here at Boston College. NIL, portal, et cetera, whatever it is, he knows the answer to. He looked around and said, this isn't going to work for me. Like, I'm not going to get the Eagles to a place that isn't just basically a Dazio 6-6, 7, you know, floating in that range. By the way, the ACC is in complete and total tumult, which is partially ESPN's fault, if not totally. So rather than just say all these things and say, hey, I'm a better, by the way, like I talked to several people when this happened and in the industry, they're like, that guy's just fit to be an NFL coordinator. He's just not a college head coach. That's it. You're just, that's the type of coach you are. There are truly brilliant minds that never do anything other than coordinate the NFL. And they are smart as shit and know more ball than most head coaches. Maybe that's just what that guy's destined to be. I'm fine with all this. I'm fine with him taking the job. Where I take umbrage is when you manipulate narrative to not tell, to obfuscate the truth and just not say the thing, which is what I, if he'd have just come out and said, this isn't working out for me, this is a better fit, I wish Boston College the best. He got a national reporter to fucking do his laundry and blame it on the state of college football. That is chicken shit. And that is why it makes it really hard for people to trust ESPN.com or someone who has an obvious affiliation with a coaching tree.
One general thought that I have about this before I ask you questions, a couple of questions about specific coaching job comparisons that seem to be coming up here. When Mark Richt went to the lake or wherever he went in the mid-2000s when he's Georgia's head coach, how long would his phone go without ringing for those couple days a year? Like, I doubt he got a full day, right? Like, and now in sure, Kirby's case, in Kirby's case, he might get a little bit less time. Like, maybe Kirby gets a call every 45 minutes instead of every 2 hours when he's on vacation. But I don't think that there's no system that college football has ever had or could ever have that would close the gap in number of things you have to manage between college and the NFL. It'll never happen.
Like, yeah, Steve Spurrier, who was a coach who notably golfed his ass off and would make fun of his contemporaries for how much they worked, quit during the middle of a season.
Yes.
Because of this, whatever this was in, what was that, 2012 when he quit? Whatever, thereabouts.
Yeah, a little later.
A little later, but yeah. You know what I mean. Like, and But
Richard, he said that.
Right.
I give OBC all the credit in the world where he's like, hey, this shit's changed. And like, this is... In a very OBC way, he acknowledged how incongruent it was with the life he wanted to live, and God bless him for it. Again, if Halfley had just said that, I'd be like, dude, roll tide, man. Go to the Packers. This sounds like a plum gig. Like, certainly you got a loving fan base, and like, it all makes sense. I get it. But like, this nonsense about blaming the state of affairs, like, yes, Alex, real fast, like, Mark Richt's phone never stopped ringing, or, you know, Kirby's phone whenever. If Kirby and Ryan Day and, you know, Lincoln and whoever all decided, hey, we want this thing to slow down, they could get it to slow down. These are the rules. This is the same argument at the top of the show. You guys brought this on yourself. You guys are the ones who want to compete in this environment, and you guys are the ones, no one has more power, true or false, Alex, ultimately, or influence than a successful college head coach in college athletics, right?
I agree.
Well, they could easily influence a change or some sort of moderation or temperance of this insane schedule, but they don't.
Well, here's the thing. They don't.
What did Kirby say about Dan Mullen? Like, Dan took some swipe on one of his TV shows this year at ESPN. And
he said Dan didn't like to recruit.
That's right. He's like, Dan ain't here because Dan can't fucking grind.
Which is the sequel. Which is the sequel of the TIFF the year Dan got fired.
It's also true. Like, Dan couldn't fucking Dan couldn't hold it.
But the funny thing is, if Dan turned up as the Atlanta Falcons offensive coordinator tomorrow, your ass would be jumped for joy.
Probably.
You know what I mean. You know what I'm getting at.
Saying this, that he should have been a quarterback's coach. And people were like, oh, that's your anti-Mississippi State. But I'm like, no, the dude is a really good developer of quarterback talent and a very smart offensive mind. He should have been a QB's coach like to help somebody.
You guys remember this was actually a very funny foretelling of what would happen with Dan Mullen's career. Remember, it was early 2020 when Florida was playing pretty well, but it was the COVID year, and Dan Mullen basically made a public plea to DeSantis or whatever authority it was to let them pack the swamp for some game at a time, like before the vaccines, when I really think that most right thinking people were like, you shouldn't
do that.
It
was Missouri, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, they had just, they had just played A&M or something. And he was like, the crowd noise at A&M or something. Jesus
Christ. Yeah. Anyway,
he got mad about it.
Free Kyle Pitts.
I think it was for the Missouri game, but didn't they lose it?
Free Kyle Pitts. Yes. They lost it. And then there was the fight. And then there was the Darth Vader thing. And then there was the.
Then Scott Strickland, the athletic director at Florida, is doing some damage control. And he says, and this is just part of the quote, but it's quote, Dan is really good at calling ball plays. Yep. You know, like that didn't just apply. Turned out that didn't just apply to crowd management in the pandemic, also applied to his interest in recruiting. Two questions for you guys that are related to this discussion. Boston College, like the job itself, seems to be considered to be better than being a coordinator at Ohio State, because Jeff Hafley made that move. And Bill O'Brien is, as we record this on Tuesday lunchtime, Eastern time on February 6th. Let me finish saying.
No, I know.
Clearly it's just, this is going to get stale. It is. We'll see if he gets the job. I am reasonably persuaded that he wants the job by the volume of reporting that is out there, though I don't know for sure. That's an I feel, not
yeah,
an
but
I know.
Is
Ohio State, can I ask a question?
The question that you're posing is not, it doesn't apply to everybody. Because for Jeff Hafley, the BC head coaching job was a better job than the Ohio State defensive coordinator job for different reasons than for Bill O'Brien. Is the BC head coaching job better than the Ohio State offensive coordinator job? It's a different kettle of fish. And they are, in my opinion, completely predicated on the person. The person, Jeff Hafley, 4 years ago, was a rising star head coach in the industry. The person, Bill O'Brien, is a guy who, in my opinion, like, he's the kind of guy that, like, once you're a head coach, the way he's been a head coach, you kind of gotta be a head coach. Like, it kind of sucks to not. This guy was the head coach of Penn State, understandably, when he was the head coach. This guy was the head coach of Penn State, a job of which there are not 15, more than 15 better in the sport. And then he was the head coach / general manager of a professional football team. Everything is a backslide for that guy. That is not an offensive coordinator job. That is not a head coaching job.
So, ironically, he got wrung out, done up, fucking torched. They're killing you in the QRTs, bro, for leaving Penn State, if you remember that. Absolutely just destroyed for leaving Penn State. Why would anyone want to leave Happy Valley?
Doug, you want to talk about a Wikipedia page? My man has a Wikipedia page. It is just quite fascinating.
He was another recipient of just like a force feeding from the agency play sourcing stuff. Like, I don't know. Like, we talked about this on the previous cycles back when we were on Patreon, those subscriber shows, which are still in our archive. When Georgia Tech was debating taking the interim off key, the person that was gonna get that job was Willie Fritz. That story's been told. And Willie decided to stay at Tulane. I think it's worked out for Willie. I think he's in a great opportunity, and I think there's a lot of advantages to Houston. I'm not saying one job's better than the other. I'm just saying for that person. But while Willie Fritz sort of felt like the front runner, I think was the front runner, at least according to like the Georgia Tech people, Bill O'Brien was being force fed to Georgia Tech by his agents, like, and by agent friendly media. And so I don't know if it's necessarily the same thing that's happening right now, But Alex has a point of like, you can't escape. It's the old, like, this is an old PAPN joke, but it still rings true because this guy's name was also mentioned for BC. It's like when Troy Calhoun, like Troy Calhoun was, there used to be a PAPN joke years ago. Troy Calhoun's interested in the job. That was the full joke. And Richard and I actually, the first time we met one of his agents, they were like, we think it's funny. Where like, if a job came open, and that person knows who he is. If the job came open, it was like, yeah, and Troy Calhoun. Troy Calhoun was like, if there were nine coaches, the ninth was always listed, like, oh, could fit at this job, was Troy Calhoun. And so B.O.B. has kind of become that, but I think it's for the reasons that Richard's stating, which is like, he wasn't going to fucking be Belichick's successor for the Patriots. Like, this is as good as he can get right now, and he wants to be a head coach. And so
okay. It
is there's some symmetry, Alex. I definitely get that, but there's also, I think, per the coaches, like, it's their own timeline. I think that's what it is. And he probably can't abide. Also, hey, maybe this is a referendum on Ohio State and Ryan Day, but we can talk about that in some other time.
All right. One more trip to Rumorville. Then I'm just going to ask this and I'm going to get out of the way. And you guys can take the rest of the episode from here. You guys have both said in the last few months, variations of on different shows, that UCLA is pretty good. UCLA is fine. UCLA is well positioned to go into the Big Ten.
We said they're fine.
At the end of last regular season, some forces around UCLA were spreading, reporting, rumor that Chip was going to get fired from that job. And in the last week, some forces around Chip or UCLA, probably Chip, I would guess, but I don't know, have spread the idea that Chip might leave UCLA and go make a Halfley move and go be a coordinator in the NFL. Whether either of those things was ever true or not, I don't know. But I do know that two rumor cycles in 3 or 4 months about your coach no longer being your coach doesn't sound very stable. I know that Dante Moore left. I know that they're going to lose a lot of games probably in the Big Ten next year. Are you guys holding to the belief that they are fine? Because I think they might not be fine. I think they are like in. Okay, go ahead.
Couple things here. The Dante Moore of it all, see ya. That's a developmental player who was not what he was built to be when he came when he came on campus. So okay, box that up, throw it away. I reported on this at the end of the season. There were forces in the UCLA ecosystem who were trying to get Chip Kelly out of that job. UCLA's administration was behind him at the time, as I reported in late November, early December. And that's why I don't trust the Chip NFL things as far as I can throw it. Because when you link the two things, it's not the Chip ecosystem as much as it is. Now, where it could certainly be the Chip ecosystem is seeing the writing on the wall of the last 10 weeks and saying, right, you know, in a not exactly the same thing as Jeff Halfley, but like my time may be up here because of the last 10 weeks. You know what I'm saying? That sure merit to it. I'm not going to dismiss that out of hand, but no, now the question of, do I think UCLA is in a good spot to enter into the Pac-12? I think so.
Big Ten.
I think they're, you know.
Alex, did you say that about like they're going to lose? Did you look at that schedule?
I did look at it. I played the schedule game. I did.
You did? Okay.
What are we
in
doing?
In their first 5 weeks, they
what
have.
What are we doing here, guys? Do I need to holler?
So in their first 5 weeks of the season, sorry, 4 weeks of the season, they go Indiana at home, at LSU, Oregon at the Rose Bowl, at Penn State.
What?
They're going to be 1-3 after those games.
Also, their last regular season game of the year is at home versus Fresno, which is not like necessarily a penciled in win.
They lost that exact game like 2 years ago. Yeah,
a couple.
Dude,
things.
I'm just yeah.
A couple things. I'm going to have to scream about this apparently every. For the entire offseason. If you are in the Big Ten or you are in the SEC, congrats. Your schedule is now hard. I don't care who you are. you play somebody. So yes,
well, they're burning off the LSU contract, Richard.
Yes, but what I'm saying is, like, this, I do not subscribe to the schedule game for Big Ten and SEC teams moving forward because everybody's schedule is hard. Congrats. So for me,
okay,
how do we know?
You still don't need to have Fresno and LSU on there,
right? But how do we know LSU is going to be worth the shit? That's the thing when you talk about the schedule games. How do you know LSU? How do you know that this LSU team that they're going to play is going to be worth the shit to where they can't beat them? Like, this is where I talk about, like, you want to play a schedule game? Okay. You look at the helmets and you think one thing, and then we get to October and it certainly will be a different thing. And then, like,
LSU is going to be a double digit point favorite in that game.
They are.
I'm almost certain.
Okay.
Sorry. What are we doing? I was buttoning your princess dress.
all right. Point is, Richard, you are not backing off your thought that UCLA seems fine right
now. They're not going to win the Big Ten.
No, of course not.
They'll
keep making bowls for a few years. That's kind of what I take fine to mean in the case of UCLA, is that they'll keep making bowls for a few years, few 8-win years.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I'm sort of stuck in the middle here because I'm going to be honest. I don't know if they were to move on or if the forces that wanted him gone, if they got that, they'd know what to do with it. I think that's kind of the conceit of what Richard's getting at is it's another one of those be careful what you wish for things. I also need to understand these West Coast teams in the Big Ten for maybe a season or two before I figure out this is your worth or this is sort of like your area above replacement. I do defend the fact, like, Richard, this is even, I get it. I understand where you're going with, like, you're in the SEC of the Big Ten, you have a hard schedule. This is unnaturally shitty. And I know you're burning off these are contracts you signed well before you would be in this situation. Like, you did not know when you signed a 1-1 with LSU that you were going to have to go to Baton Rouge before hosting Oregon and going to Penn State. That's a lot of time zones in 3 weeks. Like that sucks. It 100% sucks. All that being said, I think to Alex, yes, Alex, you are correct in that there should at least be, how about we just raise an eyebrow? I don't think that Rome is burning. I think obviously Chip may not have all the people in his back pocket that he might need in terms of support at UCLA. I think at this point you should, if you are a Bruins fan and you're like, this is good, fuck him, like run him off. Like, bro, be careful. Like, I don't know if you noticed, the store is not full right now. Like, you might not like the inventory or the aisle that you're shopping from to replace him in the second week of February. So I think everyone just be cool for a year at UCLA. You guys be cool? I've been to your campus. Brentwood's very nice. Like, just fucking chill out for a second.
Steven, what this sounds like to me is reporting trip for you, maybe to a couple of UCLA home games next year.
I do love the Rose Bowl.